Hello, welcome to this edition of the Bearcats Blogcast. My name is Scott, joined, as always, by Chris Baines. How's it going, Chris?
Scott, I'm doing well. First topic of the agenda, since we are officially in the offseason, don't really have that much to cover, hoops or football side. I mean, football's in the middle of spring practices. Basketball, we are waiting to see what's going on with Mick. He's been tied to a lot of open programs. I mean, the UCLA job he's been tied to. It sounds like they backed off from Dixon because they couldn't get his buyout down at TCU from like $8 million to like $2 million. They might be heading down the dark path of rehiring Steve Lavin. The Virginia Tech job came open because Buzz Williams moved on to Texas A&M. Mick obviously has connections there, considering Whit Babcock, the previous AD prior to Mick Bone, is now their AD. It sounds like they're starting to work on an extension, or maybe they're continuing to work on an extension. All that stuff is kind of kept behind the scenes. But Scott, what's your thoughts on the whole situation?
Like, in our last podcast, I said I wouldn't be like too disappointed if like Mick Fronin took one of these other jobs. But I kind of think the way that UC's like gone about like this has been like not really great. Like, we talked about complacency a lot in the last podcast, and it sounds like they've been kind of complacent with Mick, and it seems like it could like end up costing them either a lot of money or like cost them Mick Fronin, which like probably wouldn't be that great for them, since like the carousel has spun so fast by now. But I don't know. Like, then there was like the reports of UC offered Tim a contract extension that was essentially a pay cut that they like denied, but of course they denied it. But like, the main thing was like apparently they weren't offering him a lot of new money, and I think he's like already one of the middle paid coaches in the conference now, especially that Kelvin Sampson's making $3 billion a year at Houston starting now. So I think like they put themselves in a position where like they're either going to have to like pony up a lot. Like, they're going to have to get up to like that $3 billion range, or like they're going to really risk losing him.
Yeah, I think it's a complicated situation, and I know the piece you're referring to is Mike DeCourcy, where he claimed that Mick took or was offered a functional pay cut at the start of last season or at the end of last season. I don't know how much truth there is to that. I don't know what was going on behind the scenes. My thoughts on there, focusing on that piece real quick, is where was the contract extension to at least give him a little bit of a bump? Like, you don't have to give him a functional pay cut, you know, whatever that means. I mean, it's such a vague term. Like, Scott, what does that even mean?
It seems like it would have to mean, like, he's making $2.2 million now. It'd have to be like there's no inflation, where he'd just end up keep making the same thing into the future. That's the only thing I could assume from what they say, a functional pay cut.
That's kind of my thought too, is that it's, you know, with inflation adjusted, you always get like an extra 3% merit increase because inflation is whatever, 2%. And I don't know, I don't follow that stuff very closely. Maybe I should. But if Mick's making $2 million last year, he's making, or sorry, $2.2 million last year, like you said, $2.2 million this year. It is a functional pay cut if you account for inflation, which is like right around 2%. So he's technically, his spending power, I guess, is what the financiers call it. It's you know, 2% less than it was last year because his income didn't increase to account for inflation. I mean, that being said, I think that is a little bit strange. You know, when you're paying a guy $2.2 million, what's an extra 2% to at least keep up with inflation? I do find it odd that he hasn't been extended further than the 2023 season. See, that I think that's the part that's also a little bit strange to me. I mean, they offered him an extension. And with basketball coaches, football coaches, you want to at least get them 5 years out, because then you can guarantee if Mick is going into a recruit or into the home of a recruit, he can guarantee that he's at least contracted through the time that a recruit's going to be at UC, redshirt or not. And the same thing goes on the football side. If you're having those conversations with Mick last season and you're extending him through, you know, 2025, which would be about, you know, about a 5-year cycle with visa recruiting for players in 2019, if he's recruiting for 2019 and 2020 signees, getting him through 2025 would at least guarantee he'd be there when the recruit was at UC. Why wouldn't you just offer him an extra like $100K, $50K, something like that? You understand you're pouring money into the Fifth Third Arena. You understand that there's more revenue that's going to be had after the 2018-2019 season, the one we just had. Why wouldn't you give him just a little bit more to at least keep up with inflation and then extend him an extra 2 years so he can go out and recruit? That's kind of the part of it that's a little, it's a little strange to me.
Yeah, because like that, something like that, like an extension or even like a little boost, which is like always expected. Just because when teams have a lot of success, like that's what happens. Like they keep their coach at least, like maybe not years wise, but like financially, they keep him like at the top of like the conference, the upper echelon. And now he's what, like barely in the top 50 of the top paid head coaches. Now that right. Some of these other guys are getting like giant deals on top of him. I think something like that, like definitely. It definitely matters, and it's been kind of weird. Like, if you just step back and look at, like, their commitment to basketball lately has been mostly pushed by Mick Cronin, like, talking to other teams. Like, we've talked a lot about how, like, he was willing to go out of pocket to redo the locker room, and, like, he had to flirt with UNLV to get, like, his last big contract extension. Like, stuff like that is, like, really... It's really interesting, especially judging where the program was, like, I guess now, like, what, like 20 years ago, like whenever Bob Huggins was around, and like UC was predominantly a basketball school, and now like they, like football has become like the major thing, and like to like people who are younger than us, it's like, oh yeah, of course football is the major thing. But it's just kind of weird, like just like from a grand overall scheme to see that happening. And just, I don't know, it just really strikes me as, like, they don't think Mick Cronin is going anywhere. Like, so they're not really worried about it. And maybe they don't really have to be, because, I don't know. Like, it seems like nobody buys the Virginia Tech stuff, which I think is kind of interesting, because, like, with Babcock, it was a huge part of Mick Cronin's, like, rise in Cincinnati. And they have a lot of money to spend, and like they want to keep their program really good. But at the same time, it's like Mick Cronin's like a Cincinnati guy through and through. And like until like he's actually like on the like runway about to leave, it seems like there's no real panic about him leaving.
I think we have to take a step back and look at it from like Mike Bone's perspective. When he was brought in, he came in from a program like Colorado. Obviously, he was out for a year or two. But he came in to a program with Cincinnati with the following credentials. He could focus on facility rebuilds. He could focus on, he had expertise in facility rebuilds. He completely redid Colorado's athletic department, completely redid all the facilities for the football and basketball program. And all of that, going into one of his main key purposes of being here, was getting Cincinnati into a Power 5 conference. He understands that football drives the bus. I mean, we talked about this for the last several years. When you compare Nippert Stadium and Fifth Third Arena, Nippert, they were both outdated, but at least Nippert had been brought, or at least Fifth Third Arena had more luxury seating. There was, you know, it was a multi-purpose gym, but there was a lot more revenue streams on the fifth third side than it was on the football side. Nippert needed to be attended to first before basketball, and with Babcock, you know, obviously kicked off the Nippert renovation. But Mike Bone saw that through, and once that was completed, he turned 100% of his attention to the basketball side, and he was able to get, you know, help Mick Cronin get a completely renovated Fifth Third Arena that brought the arena into the 21st century and made it one of the top arenas in the country. And he did that, and it was a great accomplishment. But how Mike Bone works is he does a lot of things behind the scenes. He doesn't come out in public and say things. He doesn't try to give an employee's agent. I mean, that's what Luke Fickle and Mick Cronin are. They're employee. They're high paid employees, but they are employees. He doesn't give them leverage by getting the public riled up and giving them extra money. I mean, I think we have to look at this as like kind of a business transaction. Mike Bone is paying Mick Cronin for services, and Mike Cronin is obliged to accomplish what he's contracted out to do: win games, keep students, keep his players in check, make sure they go to class, win championships, play basketball at a high level, and Mick is definitely doing that. He deserves a pay raise. He deserves more resources. We all agree with that. But in terms of like how it's being handled, it's kind of hard to say for me to say, because Mike Bone keeps things so close to the chest, and I kind of feel like that makes total sense. Like, what good is it to him to come out and say, yeah, we're working on Mick's contract extension. We're gonna try to offer him a 20% pay raise. We're gonna get him a bigger assistant pool. We're gonna get him more money to travel to see recruits. We're gonna source out our analytics to a firm that can tell us how to schedule better or how to play better offense or defense or whatever. We've got a pool of $1 million, and that's what we're gonna do with Mick, and it's gonna be spread out across those four or five things. See, I don't know if him opening up his playbook really helps the whole situation. And I feel like maybe it's just kind of a wait and see mode we have to do with this situation. That's my thought on it.
I think you're really spot on too. Because that's pretty much exactly what we saw with the Luke Fickle situation, where he was talking to West Virginia, like all these Virginia schools coming after our coaches. But it was like almost the same thing, where like they just like let the coach like almost do what they wanted, and like, oh, we'll take care of you on the other side, which is like one way to do it. Because like it's kind of weird where Cincinnati just is now, where like you're in a place where you, I guess, they really don't think they can pay coaches like that upper echelon, at least right now. And like, if you can't go up that high, or just refuse to go up that high, you're going to like lose coaches, or you're going to have your coaches like rumored to leave every year.
Yeah, it's such a complicated situation. And I mean, I think you mentioned it earlier, he's something like the 49th highest paid head coach. He's been lapped by other coaches getting bigger pay raises. For Mick, I think he understands the situation that UC's in. He understands that, well, really, he understands the complex state of college athletics is driven by football. Football is going to be first. He's not necessarily second, but he has to compete with football with everything. It's like, you know, football and basketball at UC have to be like 1A, 1B. And he's working in a situation where his athletic department has limited resources. They have to balance things on both sides. And, you know, that's kind of it's a good problem to have, because you know, UC has two high-performing programs that need resources, and Mike Bone has to juggle what to give to each. For Mick, does he really need an extra $300,000? Like, let's say he goes from 2.2 to 2.5, which would put him, I think, like top 30th or something like that. Would an extra $300,000 in his pocket, like $200,000 after taxes, roughly? Would that be better spent for his ability to bring in recruits and take the program to the next level, et cetera, by having an extra $300,000 in his pocket? Or would it be better spent having a bigger assistant pool, so he can hire high quality assistants, or you know, more money to travel see recruits, or hire an analytics firm? Like, I saw this on Twitter last night. There's an analytics firm out there called HD Intelligence that they use predictive analytics to help teams choose the best opponents to maximize their quality of schedule. Like, how many times have we bitched about the strength of schedule of UC? And they could, you know, spend $50,000, $100,000 to hire that firm to help them with that kind of scheduling and those kinds of extra analytics that the best teams in the country are using. For Mick, maybe it's a case of he's still negotiating, you know, okay, give me an extra $50,000 so I can, you know, keep up with inflation, but put an extra $300,000 to $500,000 into these certain areas. And maybe it's that complexity that's kind of holding things up. And it's so frustrating because we as fans were like, okay, let's give this guy what he needs. Let's make sure that he's, you know, he's paid and he has all the resources he needs. But when you talk about, like, you know, where does that extra $300,000 to $500,000 go? I mean, that's just a more complex thing to work out. That, like, you know, I mean, I don't even want to begin to try to figure out. So, I don't know, Scott. It's such a complex situation, and I hate that we have to kind of play the wait it out mode. But maybe that's just what we have to do.
Yeah, and that, I think it's even like more just doubly frustrating. It's like. Because that's a very real issue for UC, or at least it's something that they've made a real issue. Like, when you look at the money just being thrown around by, like, the Power 5 teams, like, Kermit Washington is going to make $3 million a year. Yeah, Kermit Washington, I don't think that's his name. What's his name? Kermit Davis.
Kermit Davis?
Yeah. He's making $3 million a year now at Ole Miss. And, like, you would say, like, where's Ole Miss compared to UC? Like, you would, like, look further down the totem pole. Like, some of it is just keeping up with the Joneses, which is, like, I guess is going to be a lot harder for some of these teams that don't have, like, Tillman Fertitta throwing money at their program.
Yeah, I mean, you look at down that list, like, Mike Bray, he makes $2.4 million, pretty much the same salary as Mick. But I guarantee he has a much larger assistant pool and he's better amenities for recruiting. Like, you mentioned Ole Miss. I mean, they can pay their head coach $3 million because they've got SEC cash just laying around for all kinds of amenities that UC just doesn't have. You know, Mark Few only makes $1.7 million. I mean, obviously, he's way underpaid. I mean, he's done at Gonzaga. He's way underpaid. But for him to make his program better, you know, we don't know what else is in his offer. We don't know what other cash is laying around that Gonzaga spends on assistants and travel and recruiting and analytics and all that kind of stuff. But, I mean, I guarantee he could name his own salary at Gonzaga, and they would try to match it, and they wouldn't really think about it.
Yeah, 100%.
But I wonder if that $1.7 million is just him saying, hey, I'm fine making $1.7 million if we can spend an extra $2 or $3 million on all these other things I need to make the program run like a well-oiled machine. And that's where I'm like, you know, Kelvin Sampson made $3 million this year or is making $3 million starting next season with his new contract. It's nice, you know, it's good eye candy that he's in the top 20s. I mean, fans, you know, Houston fans are, you know, probably patting themselves on the back knowing that they have a $3 million head coach on the football side and a $4 million head coach on the basketball, or I'm sorry, $3 million on the football, $4 million on the back, sorry, $3 million on basketball, $4 million on football. I need more coffee. But at the end of the day, maybe Mick making $2.2 million, you know, only $800,000 less than that, but being able to spend more on other things to help his program, maybe that's just what UC needs to get over the hump in March and in other areas. I don't know. It's. I feel like what you mentioned earlier, you know, UC taking advantage of Mick. I think there is a little bit to that, but maybe a lot of it is he's trying to figure out how to best allocate a pool of money. Like, maybe it's a situation where Mike Bone came to Mick and said, I got $1 million that I can give you extra beyond what you're getting this year. How do you want me to spend that? Do you want me to give you $500K for your own salary, $300K for an assistant pool, $100K for travel, $100K for analytics? And then maybe Mick is just kind of figuring out where that $1 million needs to go. I don't know. It's so complex, and I hate to keep using that word, but, you know, when you see fans on Twitter, like, spouting off, like, oh, what's going on here? There's panic in UC. There's dysfunctionality. I think Mike DeCourcy's article didn't help things, definitely hurt things. It is what it is, and I think we just have to just wait and see what comes out of this whole situation.
I think some of it is just kind of spurned by, like, what's going on around Mick Cronin. It's like last year, there weren't really any rumors about him, like, being a candidate for any of these other jobs. It's just when they, like, these other schools really start making pushes at them is when, like, they really, like, have to stay on their game. Like, I think that's another, like, interesting part of this is, like, if he's actually serious about, like, taking another job, like, then obviously they have to act more serious about, like, trying to lock him down and keep him. Because like, I think the biggest thing is, like, you can just see where, like, money really pays a big, like, is a big thing with, like, a lot of these hires. Like, just look at Chris Mack. Like, the Chief was a Xavier guy through and through, a Cincinnati guy through and through, and he got offered a ton of money to go to Louisville. Like, it just happened in that case, and it could easily happen with Mick Cronin, where some, like, UCLA or Virginia Tech or whomever offers them $3+ million a year. And, like, that's $1 million more than you're making. It's almost hard to turn that type of stuff down.
Yeah, and yeah, I get it. I mean, I understand that. I mean, that's just the lay of the land here, right? Like, you got Chris Mack. Chris Mack's a perfect example. He was making good money at Xavier. They were in the Big East. They were in a, you know, I call the Big East like a top, probably like a top three basketball conference. They were a little down this year, but I mean, they're usually up in the top three. So, you know, from a recruiting basis, I mean, he goes into a recruit's room and, or a recruit room, a recruit's, that's not bad, a recruit's living room at his house. And he can sell them on the Big East and they say, yeah, that's high level basketball. I want to compete in the Big East. That sounds great. But yeah, there's always the bigger program out there that's looking to. I mean, unless you are like that marquee basketball program, like a Louisville, like a UCLA, you're always going to be looking over your shoulder and seeing who's potentially coming after your head coach. And that's just, and that, it just is what it is. I mean, UC's lucky to have Mick from the standpoint that he has ties to Cincinnati, ties to UC. He's built this program with his own hands, and he's got his stamp all over it. Like, he is UC basketball at this point. I mean, he's synonymous with it. But yeah, that's just the landscape that UC lives in.
Yeah, and like, that's another like thing is, like, he's been really synonymous with the program. And, like, that's good because it's, like, shown, like, the rise has been, like, really credit to him and, like, everything he's done from, like, where they were when they had the Andy Kennedy season where they couldn't do anything and, like, they had no recruits for the next season and everything was, like, bare bones. And UC won, like, 11 games his first year.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, to, like, where they are now, like, make the tournament 8 years in a row, like, constant conference, like, upper crust. But, like, at the same time, like, everything we talked about last week still applies. Where, like, the program, it just feels like it's kind of hit like, a little bit, like a March stagnation, where they just can't get out of the first weekend, and it's got a lot of people, like, on edge.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't have, like, the administration on edge, like you said earlier. It's like they're fine with Mick, like, they're happy with Mick. But it seems like maybe, like, they're being too coy and not trying enough to... Like, maybe if they were more vocal, it would help. But I'm not really sure. It is, like, a really interesting situation where, like, you can't just make, oh, they need to do this, this, and this. Because, like, maybe they can't do, like, this, this, and this. And it's, like, if you can't do some of those things, like, you end up with, like, your head coach being, like, thrown, like, around at, like, two major jobs. And, like, you have to either, like, step up and pay him or... Like, hope those other teams look somewhere else. It's, like, even in, like, the same vein, like, Kevin Willard's name is getting thrown around for Virginia Tech, and he makes under $2 million a year. So, like, he's going to get a pay raise, like, no matter what. Like, going back to what you said about the agents using these as power plays, it's, like, Mick got a hefty contract and all sorts of perks from the UNLV thing a couple years ago. And now it's, like, he's... Like, you're really in the driver's seat right now to get whatever he wants in this current negotiation. And, like, that's good for him because he definitely has earned it with his success on the court.
Yeah, and that's the thing is, like, I'm glad you kind of brought up, like, what we talked about last week about kind of having so much stagnation in March. Kind of the seeing good to great seasons come to a really thud of an ending in March the last couple of years. I kind of look at, like, Mick's era as, like, three phases. Like, the first few years in the Big East was basically the rebuild. Play average to slightly above average of basketball to climb out of the doldrums and be competitive in a really good Big East, right? They did that. They got to that season where they went to the NCAA tournament, and then I can't remember the year right before they went to the Sweet 16. Then the year when they got to the Sweet 16, I would consider that the start of the second phase. That would be like stability, inside and out. Tweaking things offensively and defensively to make sure that you're competitive on a game-to-game basis, on a year-to-year basis, bringing in more higher quality recruits, starting to kind of tap into those recruiting sources that that like Bob Huggins tapped into. And obviously the recruiting landscape is a lot different now than it was then, with like test scores, for example, that they're actually necessary. But then we're starting to get into like that third phase where how do we get this program to a state where we can see consistent deep runs in March? And, you know, Mick's done a great job over that second phase to get to March, you know, get an opportunity to go deep in the NCAA tournament. And we kind of talked about it last week. How do they go deep in March? They've got to start playing top 25 offensive defense. They've got to be more consistent in that basis. They've got to start landing better recruits. You know, Mick's done a solid job recruiting good scoring guards. Jaron Cumberland, Samari Curtis. He's brought in Logan Johnson, who could be a pretty good point guard. We don't really know what his capabilities are, but on paper, he looks like a pretty solid recruit. He's not done as great of a job on the inside of the four and the five, outside of like Gary Clark. If we're talking about financials, what does he need to make phase three successful? What does he need to get those good recruits? What does he need to play better offense and defense? Is it analytics? Is it being able to travel to see better recruits? Is it having a better assistant to coach up a certain side of the ball that's lacking offense? If we're looking at this third phase as let's get this program back to where we were at the height of the Bob Huggins era, that's where I feel like the pressure could start being on Mick, where, you know, he's done a lot of great things here. If he gets a contract going forward where he's, you know, he's got a large assistant pool. I mean, he's already got the arena. He can sell recruits on the arena. It's sold out every night. It's got all the amenities that any big program has. If he's getting an assistant, if he's getting a new contract that has a bigger assistant pool to keep him competitive, he can do all those sorts of things to make the program a lot better, even if he's only making $2.5 million. The pressure would really be on him in the next couple of years to really start making deep runs in March. I hope that he can improve recruiting. I hope he can do all of those things. If UC comes at him with that contract and he's not doing those things, that's where I'd be a little bit – I start to kind of see a little bit of the hot seat heating up, especially when you're talking about like boosters in this program who still very fondly remember the Huggins days.
Yeah, because in that sense, like you're like chasing shadows, where like he's like in the minds of some people, especially like the older people who have like a lot of money, like you just said, like they really remember like the glory days, where UC was like not just the top of the conference, so it's like a given they would win the conference every year,
right?
Like they would be number one team in the nation, like a number one seed, like losing like 10 games in a year, or whatever was. Like unbelievable, like just from like a results standpoint, like that's where UC is now. Like they've lost single digit games the last 3 years. But like one thing you did say earlier, real quick, you said like the first year they made the tournament that was like phase two, that or had phase one. That had to be phase two, because don't you remember that team would have won the national championship if they didn't have to play UConn in the first round or second round?
Oh my God, yeah. No, that's a good point. I mean, yeah. Yeah, good point. Keep going.
But I think that it is, I don't want to say like telling, but I don't know. It's interesting that like Mick's first 2 years were really like the years like first 2 years they made the tournament, like the phase two era you're talking about, or like the year like where they really kicked it up to gear. And it seems like, I don't know, it just seems like they never really like have graduated past that phase. It's like they've like already almost were where they were. Like, in terms of, like, this is how we play, and, like, everybody has, like, almost had that figured out. And, like, of course, like, they've had some classes where they were really good. Like, I think on some of that stuff, you could be like, oh, they, well, like, they moved from the Big East to the American Conference. And that's completely different. Like, they got a softer schedule, and that could be a cause for more wins. Which, I don't know, it probably definitely is. On, like, the bottom
line. Oh, it definitely is. Go ahead.
Yeah, the way where like you have like a, almost like a little bit of an inflated record, and like maybe that's something that like has to, like, comes in with his contract. I don't know. We're not his agent. Maybe we should be. Maybe we should be his agents now, so we can make a lot of money starting.
Oh now. Yeah, I'd love to work 23 hours a day.
We just have him as our one client. And we just, like, take whatever he makes and just then retire. Then we move on to Luke Fickell. And whatever happens with his next contract, we take all the credit for.
To start spreading that empire, but only within UC. Yeah. Let's not get too crazy. Yeah, I feel like once this arena has been finished, Mick doesn't really have many excuses for not landing, like, consistent four-star recruits. I mean, if you're going after like a five-star, you have to have certain special circumstances there. You know, Weissman out of Memphis. He's going to Memphis. He's the number one overall recruit in the country and he's going to Memphis because the Memphis head coach Penny Hardaway was his head coach in high school. I mean, that's a very special circumstance that Mick's probably never going to find. But he should be able to find 3 to 4. Right, yeah, he should be able to find, like, high three-star, four-star recruits on a consistent basis, less projects. One thing about the staff, I mean, they work their tail off. I mean, they identify talent. They do a nice job identifying really under-the-radar talent. Like, this year, Brooks has developed into a pretty solid post player over the last couple of years. I mean, he came out with not that many offers. He kind of was a surprise commit. The issue I have with this staff is that they have a hard time really sealing the deal with solid recruits. Like, Samir Torrance was a good example where he was on UC's radar. UC followed him for years. He wound up signing with Marquette. That's a four-star, high-tier four-star guard that could have really made an impact on the program. UC just slipped through his fingers. Hopefully that doesn't happen with CJ Belcher or RJ Davis. But with the arena being completely renovated, he has that to sell recruits now. What he needs is just more money for recruiting and analytics and his assistants. If he gets all of those things, there really shouldn't be an excuse for this program not landing those types of recruits they should be getting and making deeper runs in March. Because we talked about this last week. You need to play good defense in March, and UC hasn't been doing that recently. But a lot of it is also they've got to have more weapons offensively. And UC runs a pretty solid offense. They're usually a top 50 offense, at least since they revamped it before 2017. It's been, I don't have a lot of complaints about it, but they just need more talented players on that roster to run it. And they need to make more tweaks to what they're doing offensively. But at this core, they need better personnel. And a lot of that starts with recruiting, and even before that, it starts with being able to go out there and sell recruits on things. And if Mick gets the money to do all those things with this new contract, they should be making deeper runs as March. If they aren't, that's when I kind of start to be a little on the let's put a fire under Mick's seat kind of crowd.
I think like one of the biggest things that kind of like stands out, this is more about like Mick and like, not really about the situation. I was like, you put athletes in that kind of system, and you have what Texas Tech has. Like, I know Chris Beard's a great coach, but, like, their profile-wise, like, they're really similar. Like, Texas Tech's offense isn't, like, a world-beating offense, but their defense is, like, all-time elite this season. And, like, what's the biggest difference between, like, Texas Tech and Cincinnati? It's like Texas Tech has, like, lottery draft picks on their team. And UC has had, what, one first pick in the Mick Cronin era? That was last year with Jacob Evans. Like, that's a huge difference. And, like, Texas Tech has made back-to-back big runs in the tournament. Like, something like you can't really understate. It's, like, what you can do with, I guess, like, the system. But, like, if you just have players that are the upper echelon. And I think some of that just comes to, like, back to, like, where Mick is, like, perception-wise. Because, like, you just, like, look at the slate of conference coaches. It's, he's not the superstar coach. Like, he's not, like, considered, like, the best X's and O's coach. Like, you're probably like, oh, look at what these other guys are doing. Like, Greg Marshall, like, even. It's, like, a really high, like, resume. And, like, they ended up playing really well down the stretch. Like, and, like, he's even being, like, bandied about for, like, the Arkansas job. Like just, like, from all these terms, like, what Kelvin Sampson's done, like, he's, like, the biggest hot name. Like, then you have Penny. And then, like, you have, like, UConn just, like, higher profile, like, nationally. Like, and, like, Mick kind of, like, slides to, like, he's not, like, the shiny diamond anymore. Like, you know exactly what you're going to get from, like, a Mick Cronin team.
Yeah. And,
like, he's, like, a solid coach. Like, he's a good coach. Like, nobody, like, oh, he sucks. But, like, when, like, the candidates were, like, Mick Cronin and Jamie Dixon for UCLA, there's, like, a lot of UCLA people complaining about how, like, their coaching search ended up with Jamie Dixon and Mick Cronin. It's, like, I just, like, nationally, like, his perception isn't as, like, the greatest coach, like, the most high-profile coach in the world. I think that kind of, like, ends up, like, floating back into what we were saying earlier about, like, if you don't have to pay him $2.5 million a year until, like, your hand is pushed, like, you, like, don't do that. And they haven't done that, which I guess is, like, good for them. But it almost, like, puts you in a situation where, like, if you have to, like, really step up his contract, it's, like, you better be really happy with the job he's doing, or you're paying a lot of money for, like, the same thing. I don't know, it's a weird area, like you mentioned earlier.
Yeah, that's the thing, is, like, if you're paying him more money and you're still getting him the same results in the next few years, like, you're not making, like, if UC doesn't make a Sweet 16, if he gets everything he wants, and in the next 3 years, he doesn't make a Sweet 16, I would be very, very concerned with who's heading up this program. I don't know if that's going to happen, but it would definitely cause be a sore spot for myself. More of the fan base would be on the anti-Mick crowd, and you got to think Mike Bone's going to be a little bit, he's going to feel the heat too, because you know the donors are going to be, like, up his ass about it as well. So I would definitely give Mick the money, but he's got to show more results. He's got to show better results in March. He's got to show better results on the recruiting trail. I mean, he's got his arena now. He's got a high caliber arena. He needs to now get out there and sell recruits on playing there. I think it'll happen, but yeah, I would be very concerned if they don't get a Sweet 16 in the next 3 years. Yeah, do you have anything else on Mick? Or
it's interesting, like, you say that, because I think, like, I don't really think that there'd be, like, almost any scenario, like, where, like, they would be the ones who would push him out. It's like he'd have to leave. I don't think that, like, they would, like, if they keep going, I don't know, like, winning 27, 28, 29 games every year, and, like, they do lose early, I don't think there'd be, like, any way they would fire him. Like, no matter if they just, like, lose in the first round the next 5 years in a row. Like, if they keep making the tournament and doing well in the AAC, I think they would just keep him forever.
See, I don't know if they would actually fire him, but I could see his, and this is just a completely out of this even dimension scenario. Like, they could do the thing with Mike, with Mick Cronin, that Mike Bone did with Jameel Elliott. He just basically let the contract run out, which would be just, like, basically, like, the death of a thousand cuts for Mick Cronin's program, because he couldn't recruit. He would know in the back of his mind that he's, you know, got to find another job elsewhere somewhere. So it could be a kind of situation like that, or like with, you know, Texas Tech and Tommy Tuberville way back when he knew he was either going to get fired or kind of let his contract fizzle out. So he just took another job elsewhere. So it might be one of those kinds of situations. I don't know. I agree. I don't think they would outright fire him. Hell, they couldn't even pay him enough to fire him. Like they're not going to pay him the rest of his contract plus a buyout. Like, we're not Notre Dame.
Yeah, and like just like from that way, it's like there's no way he would coach the last year of his contract. Like that right. that just never happens. Well, in any sport, like unless like as you mentioned, you're in a situation where you're going to get fired. And they don't have the money to fire you. It's really complex. I think we handled all the complexities pretty well. I think the situation would be like more murky if like Jerron Cumberland like had actually declared, which apparently he hasn't done yet. Which I don't think really makes a lot of sense. Like, why not just like test the waters and see? Like, he's a junior. What does it matter?
Yeah, because according to those rules, right, he can declare, meet with agents, meet with like NBA scouts and stuff, and still come back for a senior year, right?
Yeah. Yeah, you can like use agents now, you just can't take like money from them.
You just have like, you just can't like, whenever the NBA draft is, you just like, there's some, it's like if he doesn't, you know, come back to school by like whatever it is, June 1st or whatever that date is. Yeah, he's like fully in, right?
Yeah, it's like Memorial Day. It's like he has like a month or two to declare and then come back.
Which,
I don't know. It just makes sense for everybody to do that. At least I think so.
Right. No, I agree. I mean, I think he's gonna be back for his senior year. I don't think he's an NBA prospect.
No, definitely not.
But and I don't. Most people don't think so, but yeah, I agree. It would make sense to kind of test the waters, and this would be definitely if he was like in a Jacob Evans kind of situation where he was seeing first round predictions on him from a lot of sources, that would make this a lot different. But yeah, we'll just have to wait and see. It is a little odd. I mean, the two situations are different, but. It is a little odd that we have not heard anything on Luke Fickell's contract extension, right? Like, how long has that taken to get in place? We're in April now. They're in the middle of spring practices. Like, under normal situations, you probably announce a contract extension for a head coach back in, like, January if they have a good year. Like, why haven't we heard anything about that? Like, are we going to have to wait 3 more months for this Mick Cronin thing to happen? Like, I have no idea. Both situations are very strange to me.
Yeah, especially the Fickell thing really is odd. Because like if it didn't happen then, like back when he like stayed, you'd be like, oh, well maybe they're just waiting to spring ball. That's when some extensions seem to happen. Like no, nothing has happened. He's still. Yeah. So then like right before the season, it definitely does not seem like they would announce a contract extension right before the season.
It'd be odd, right? Because how's he going to recruit this summer?
Yeah, and whatever ends up happening with him next year, it's, I don't know, that's just weird. Like, and nobody ever says that, like, oh, here's game one, oh, here's our contract extension. Unless, like, he's really serious about, like, staying at UC for the long haul.
Right. It's very odd.
It's really odd. What is taking so long? Seems like some, the other football extensions like were in like March or like whenever like the quarter changed. I don't know, but it is weird.
Well, like it seemed like we were waiting on all the coaches to get in line. I mean, they lost Joker Phillips to Maryland. They lost Steve Stripling to retirement. They got their replacements about a month ago before spring practices started. You think they would have announced an extension, etc. Like right around then, or at least by April 1st. Like you think they would have had all that stuff hammered out, like at least before spring practices started, and we haven't heard anything. It's just very strange. And I think it almost speaks to that Mike Bone keeps everything behind the scenes, like a lot of it. And I don't know. It is curious that we haven't seen anything on it up until now, or at all.
And like he's like another guy who his contract isn't like very big compared to a lot of his contemporaries. I'm sure it's got a big reason why it seemed like West Virginia was like an option there.
But right.
It's going to keep being an option if he's like making less than $2 million a year.
Yeah.
Because you got to think like his buyout would go down the longer he stayed. I don't know how that works. But it seems like how it normally works. I don't know. It's really interesting how that they do these things and they just stay so quiet about them.
It's such a weird off season. I mean, we just got to hope that we kind of hear something about Bose in the next couple of weeks before the fan base tears itself apart. I don't know if you've been seeing the message boards lately, but they have been nuts. You're on Twitter. It's basically the same thing.
Apparently, Fickell makes $2.3 million a year now. His contract is up in that range. So he makes more than Mick Cronin. Interesting.
That kind of makes sense.
But still, like, both your coaches make under $3 million a year. Like, when you're this high-profile team and, like, a Power 6 conference, as UC is, it's just kind of odd.
Right.
And like, mostly because, like, they've had success. It's not like these guys have been failing. Like Luke Fickell just, like, led them to double-digit wins. Like, you would expect a boost there of his contract. And, like, Mick Cronin is, like, a solid coach who wins a lot.
Mm-hmm. And maybe that just speaks to, like, they're trying to hash out all those little intricacies of the contract in the back end. Like, we know Fickell also needs a better assistant pool. We know that he needs more help on the recruiting trail in terms of just resources. Maybe that's all. Maybe they're trying to figure all that stuff out. Who knows? But yeah, hopefully we'll hear something on both ends in the next couple of weeks.
It's kind of wild when like we know like how much some of these power programs pay their assistants, and like UC's that whole coaching staff makes less than like their head coaches. What's the craziest message board thing that you've read so far?
Oh, I don't know. Like, it's a range of, you know, Mick's drawing this out just for the attention. He's, you know, whining about things. He's, you know, UC should just outright fire him now because he's demanding, making all these demands. He's, you know, holding UC's feet to the fire. It's just the dumbest stuff you could possibly think about. Like after the Mike DeCourcy article came out, people were like, "Oh man, why is UC disrespecting Mick like this?" And then like the opposite side of the coin was like, "Well, Mick doesn't deserve all of this. This is just Mike. Mike DeCourcy is just Mick's mouthpiece in the media." And it was like it just started a whole bunch of schnaufrout on the internet that I really got involved in at one point, and that was a giant mistake. So. Lesson learned there. Basically just telling people to shut the hell up.
It's the internet, Chris, that never happens. But it is like really an in-depth topic that like, I don't think there's like any black and white like case you can make. It's like, oh, you definitely have to do this or you definitely have to do this. Like go one way or the other. It seems like they're like in a position where like almost like where Fickell was with like West Virginia, where it's like if they're gonna like pony up and like pay him and he's gonna take it, like that's fine with them. But if like he's gonna stick around, they'll be like, okay, good, we're happy to have you.
Yeah.
But like, is the same thing's gonna happen with Mick Cronin? Like if he's like comfortable to try going to one of these power conference teams, seems like I think they'll probably fight hard to keep him, but it seems like there's a limit to how hard they would fight.
Yeah, but like how much of that is like really up to Mike, you know, Mike Bone? It's I don't know. It seems I don't know. So his hands are tied in some senses. Like, the revenue is just like there. Like, hopefully the revenue is there. Like, there's more revenue to be had with the renovations and the new media deal, which we'll get into in a second. But I don't know. If UCLA comes calling and offers Mick a $5 million deal with all of the amenities and all that stuff he's been asking for and then some, I don't know if Mike can really pony up the cash. And like we talked about last time, like if Mick did leave, you know, this is a good job. This is a top 25 job. Like there would be suitors at Mike Bone's door if Mick ended up leaving, and those would be pretty good coaches, I would think. So, you know, UC wouldn't. I want Mick to be here long term. I want him to lead this team to deep runs the NCAA tournament on a consistent basis. If he didn't end up leaving, UC wouldn't crash to the bottom like Xavier had this past season.
It's like he's just using them as an example. It's like they've had, like, they showed you can, like, recruit to Cincinnati and, like, do well. It's like,
yeah.
Of course, a future coach would do well. And, yeah. That's like, I don't know. It just feels like UC could make something happen if they are forced to. Like, they did a good job with the Fickell hire. Like, that's turned out pretty well so far.
Yeah, so far.
Of course, like, the very first hire, like, Mike Bone made wasn't great.
Wait, what?
Wasn't he the one who hired Tuberville?
No, that was Witt.
Oh.
Don't you remember that presser? Oh, man.
No.
The pep rally?
I blocked all that from my memory.
Yeah, what
happened after oh god, I forgot his name too. I don't remember any of the coaches anymore. What happened when Butch Jones left?
Witt took about 5 minutes and called up the first guy on his Rolodex and said it was Tommy Tuberville without doing any research.
Oh god.
Yeah.
Maybe Tommy Tuberville will become Virginia Tech's basketball coach.
Well, honestly, that's mean. Do you remember that? It was literally like the next day where he's like, yep, we got Tuberville. And everyone was like, yeah, well, I know who that guy is. And it turned out to be a disaster. But, I mean, that just shows how little research he did.
It was like 3 seconds after, like, Butch Jones was like, oh, I'm going to Tennessee. It's like, oh, yeah, Tommy Tuberville is the coach now.
I was like, oh, okay. I've recovered from Jones leaving.
Yeah, I think we talked this one out pretty well. You mentioned the AAC had a new media deal where I think every school gets almost $7 million a year. The major thing, like, there's no grant of rights, which is pretty great since the Big 12 deal expires in like 5 or 6 years. It's like some
2023.
So that's
or like, 25, sorry.
Yeah, something like that. Something to keep an eye on for all the schools in the conference who don't want to be in it anymore. And, like, the biggest thing it seems like is there's going to be a lot more stuff on, like, ESPN+, which probably won't, like, affect UC as much unless, like, they take a little dip. But they're going to have games on ESPN+, and apparently, like, some will still be on, like, actual CBS from what somebody said. But it's like a lot of like leaning into the internet, and it seems like no matter what they did, like it would be leaning a lot into the internet. Like there's just no getting around it now. It's like if you don't watch games like on ESPN Plus or something like that, it's like you're living in the past, and you have to pay that $5 a month now. It's coming out of your wallet, so don't get that coffee for 2 days just by ESPN Plus. Like, what were your thoughts about this? This deal, like ESPN didn't even let it get out of their grips before they kept the AAC.
I love it. There was a lot of angst about the ESPN Plus stuff, and you know, we'll get to that in a second. But I mean, yeah, it was a $1 billion deal, and that's billion with a B, with a big fat B. $1 billion, 12-year deal that basically extended their contract with ESPN. So, They are on the mothership still. They're in the top tier of programming in terms of sports. And yeah, you mentioned it's a $7 million per school per year deal. It's a $5 million increase over what they're currently getting. In terms of like where they stand in terms of the Power Five, obviously they're like $30 to $40 million behind the Power Five. But I mean that wasn't the goal here. The goal was to stay ahead of the rest of the Group of Five. And the next highest is the Mountain West at $1.1 million per school. Except Boise State makes $1.8 million because they're the special flowers of that conference. Their media deal is coming up soon, but like Scott, there's probably not really any way where they come up and match $7 million per.
Yeah, you would like, definitely think not, unless like CBS or Fox just went crazy.
Well, like the AAC, when they were basically a complete nothing of a conference with no inventory, they were already making almost double what the Mountain West did, right? They were making $2 million. When Mountain West, the established conference that they were making 1.1. I don't see them coming up to seven, but...
Yeah, there's a $5 million like difference between what the AAC schools are going to make and what the next closest Group of Five like conference makes off their deal. Just
right.
Like you just said, like gigantic. Because you can't go like apples to apples with the Power Five because apparently the Pac-12 makes the least amount of money and they make like more than double what the AAC teams are going to make. So like that way, like you're just never going to compete, but like with your peers. And like that access bowl spot, like you're in a gigantic, huge situation. And see, I even tied it to football myself.
Yeah, and yeah, good one. You mentioned that there's more games on ESPN Plus, but there's more games that this conference is going to get on ESPN, ESPN2, and ABC. They're going up from 26 football games to 40 at a minimum. They're going from 32 to 65 basketball games, again, at a minimum. And we're talking about the major networks. It's ESPN, ESPN2, ESPNU, and also they could get some games on ABC as well. So, you know, you're getting more games on ESPN+, but you're also getting more marquee games on – you're getting double the amount of games you're getting on the marquee side of the network.
Well, some of that's just because they formed the ACC network. And like a lot of the games that would be on ESPN or ABC are going to kick off over there, which is like a huge boost
Stop,
for the.
Scott, you're ruining my narrative.
That's like tying into what you just said. That's a huge boost for the AAC because like now you take those spots, like that ESPN 2 noon game that would be, I don't know, like Syracuse and Pittsburgh, like that's your spot now.
Shutters.
And like you don't have to like rely on that ESPN News noon game. Like you get the, like the ESPN. You game. It's a huge like opportunity for the league to get like more games on TV, as you just said. And like if you're good, you're going to be on TV all the time.
Oh, and that was kind of the point you kind of made earlier. Like if you're UC Houston, UCF, Memphis, let's put those four in a big bucket. You bet on yourselves that if you continue to play at a high level, you pull in good ratings, which all four of those teams have. You will more than likely, you'll get more than your fair share of those, 100 and, well, let's keep it on the football side, 40 games that are on ESPN2, U, or ABC. You are probably going to get those. Where you're getting the shaft is if you're Tulane or Tulsa, and your games are getting thrown on ESPN+. But that's the trade-off, right? If you're Tulane and Tulsa, you're guaranteed a huge boost in income to $7 million. You've not seen money like that ever. Teams like UC, where they had a big the Big East money back in the day, they have been at that level of $7 million, right? Now they're getting back to what that is, and they're going to get more games on ESPN2, U, and ABC. Yeah, UC is going to get like a UC Tulsa game on ESPN Plus every now and then, but UC should be able to bet on themselves that if they're matched up in those marquee games, those should be placed on the mothership. On top of that, if we're talking about the ESPN Plus subscription, we talked about this like a month ago when all of these rumblings started to come out. For me, I see this as a good thing. And I kind of compare what ESPN Plus is to CBS Sportsnet, which, as you mentioned, I think there could be a few more games on CBS Sportsnet, but I can't imagine it'll be that many more than they are now. It's going to be probably a lot less as ESPN tries to build up the ESPN Plus content. For me, I have Hulu, the basic, not Hulu TV, and Netflix. And I pay $20 a month for that. If I wanted CBS Sportsnet, I can get it through Hulu TV and YouTube TV, but I have to pay like $40 more. Which for me, like from a utility standpoint, I would only use that for CBS Sportsnet and would only be for those 11 or so basketball and football UC games that I want to watch every year. On the other hand, I could only pay $5 more a month and I can see all of those games on ESPN Plus. Also, I only have to pay for the entire season. But like, I only have to pay for the 6 months that the football season is on, and then I'll cancel my subscription and re-up it back in September again. So for me, I now have the ability to watch every single UC game, unless there happen to be one or two that's on CBS Sportsnet now, so I can watch much more UC games, and I can pay a lot less than what I was paying before. So in my mind, as a 100% cord cutter, this is a good deal for me.
I think more like the alternative would come in. It's like if you were somebody who like couldn't watch some of these games live, like you were led on your DVR, like you just really no way to do that.
True.
These are online. But that's a problem for what, like 2 years from now.
Well, but like that's kind of the point, is that like in my situation, this is a good thing for me. But I can totally see that side of things where you have a cable subscription, you have DVR, you're SOL, right? Unless you do pay that extra $5 a month. So I can, you know, I can see both sides of it. I'm just kind of saying in my specific cutting situation, yeah. So like it's a lot of different ways to look at it. Go ahead, sorry.
Yeah, and we know like there's a lot of people who are doing that now, who are becoming cord cutters, especially I think some like the people like they're targeting for like the growth of the league, like a lot of the younger people like are just not getting cable, and like if you could just pick up ESPN Plus from what like September through March,
then yeah,
just pay for it then. Which I think you can pay for it monthly. I'm not, I don't
know. No, that's exactly what I would do. I would spend $30 over the course of a football and basketball season and cancel it at the in March.
But I don't know how you pay for ESPN Plus. I haven't actually used it. Have you?
Oh, no, I have not. Well, because up until now, I never needed to. But
I didn't know if it was one of those things where like you had to pay for the whole year in advance or like you could actually pay month to month.
No, I think it is just month to month, and you can just re-up it, you know, whenever you want, unless they change things. And that is kind of, so that is one part of the concern, right? It's $5 a month now. Who knows if fees are going to go up as ESPN starts to load it with content, or if they make it an annual subscription, you know, who knows? But, I mean, that's a challenge for a later date. As of now, how the deal's set up, I'm happy with the deal in terms of being able to watch UC football and basketball.
Yeah, because like for UC, I think it's definitely it's a solid move. Like I don't know, like the downside would be if like you just get bad and all your games are online, like you're Tulane or Tulsa. Even like then, you're still Cincinnati. It's like you're higher profile than those teams, so you get like more cracks, more bites at the apple of at least playing in bigger games. Like, and then hopefully, like ESPN helps out with like getting some of these teams like bigger opponents for football, like these one-off games. But I think like the biggest drawback it would be with some like the smaller teams. So I was reading something about like Wichita State only had like 8 games on ESPN this year. Like it was a really down year for them most of the year. Like before, like, they ended up with more ESPN games like once they played the NIT, but like that would be like a concern. Like if you're like a fan of like a smaller team, like you just have to like pay to watch your team play all year, which would kind of suck. But like with basketball,
it would.
But with basketball, like you don't have to pay, but like almost every November game is on ESPN3 anyway. Which is like the for like almost every league now, except like if you're Duke, like, or like North Carolina, who play like all their games on some ESPN channel. Like if you're like any school, like your game, your weird November game against, who cares? Unless like you're in the SEC or Pac-12 or Big Ten, where you have your own network, like your games are already on the internet. So like it should be something that, I know we talked about this before. Like, the Miami game seems like it's been online only, like, the past, like, 15 years.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely a concern if you are a Tulsa. And you mentioned a Wichita State. Like, they had a good season and they had a drop-off. But, I mean, they're also getting, you know, paid $7 million to only be on ESPN 8 times or whatever that would be. And they're obviously going to come back. They're going to be on ESPN a lot more going forward. But like for UC, it's a bet on yourself situation, like we talked about. You're spending like a Power Five conference. You're winning double digit games on the football side. You're going to the NCAA tournament every year. You're winning a ton of games on both football and basketball. Bet on yourself to continue to do that going forward, and you will be rewarded with more marquee games on the mothership and ABC than your counterparts. And for UC, I would sign that deal on the dotted line like any day of the week.
Yeah, absolutely. Like with so much of the uncertainty that was going around before, like before like we got to this point, like I think it's a home run deal. Like staying on ESPN was obviously the number one goal.
And right.
Like ESPN was just like locking up that content, which is pretty good. Because, like, they have, like I said earlier, they have, like, a lot of those spots now that were just random ACC games that are going to be random AAC games. Like, probably, like, they'll dominate ESPNU and ESPN News. They'll be all over the ESPN platform.
ESPN AAC, yeah. And I think from, like, real quick, because we only have about 10 minutes or here, so here, it's a stopgap for UC. At the end of the day, this is a stopgap. It is getting paid now until you can get paid more a few years down the road. You mentioned it earlier. They didn't know the conference didn't sign a grant of rights. They were never going to sign a grant of rights. If they signed a grant of rights, this would have probably been a 10-figure deal, maybe $10 to $12 million. They didn't. So it got, it got chopped a little bit into $7 million. But it gave UC, it seemed like UC, the option to jump to a Power 5 conference if and when realignment starts up again. I know there's a clause in the there's clauses in the contract, as people have read it, that it can be reevaluated in 6 years or so. ESPN also has an out clause in there. It also has the ability to look at the contract and renegotiate it down if they need to, should teams leave. All of those little indicators tell me that the AAC and ESPN, one of the main drivers of realignment, expects realignment to start off again. And we talked about dates coming up. The Big Ten contract expires in 2023. UC is not going to the Big Ten, but Texas and Oklahoma might, you know. The Big 12 contract expires in 2025. Right around the time when the reevaluation out clause occurs in this new AAC contract. We just got to keep making cash, making sure UC is playing at a high level on football and basketball, even like the smaller sports like women's basketball, which, you know, shout out to them going far in the NIT in the women's NIT, baseball, lacrosse, soccer. All of those need to be playing at a high level, because when things start to kick off again, and they will in the mid-2020s, UC could be very well cashing in a far bigger check than they are now and not have to pay a lot of penalties by signing that grant of rights.
Yeah, definitely. Like, there's a lot of like the long game going on, and there's going to be a ton of posturing by all the teams in this league, which I think it's going to be like one of the interesting things about like having your like a majority of your sports like end up on a higher platform, or like they're actually somewhere to watch. like women's basketball is going to get a huge boost. Like all the games, most of the games are going to be on TV, and baseball and like so on. But like for like if you're like Central Florida or like South Florida and Houston and Cincinnati, like oh my god, that push for whatever happens with the Big 12 like in a few years is going to be insane.
Yeah, and that's another good point you brought up. I mean, with the ESPN Plus deal, part of the deal is adding, I think it's something like, I'm just throwing numbers out here. I think the first year it's like 500 games in the AAC will go on. We'll go on ESPN Plus. Now that doesn't mean football basketball. That means some football basketball, but I mean that also means those lower sports, like you mentioned there, baseball, women's basketball, lacrosse, soccer. Everything now that's being handled through like Bearcats TV is going to be up on ESPN Plus. That's great for those sports. It's going to increase to like 750 and 1,000 or so, like in the following years. Those are just numbers. I can't remember exactly where they are. But that's great for those sports, and that's a huge recruiting tool that the baseball coach or the lacrosse coach or the soccer coach, I don't remember their names, but they can use saying, hey, I can get you on ESPN Plus. I can, instead of having you broadcasted through the UC's internal network that only UC fans really watch, you can, your parents or scouts or whoever can watch you through the ESPN Plus platform. And that's a platform that was never offered before for those school, for those sports, and it's a huge boon for them.
It definitely. Maybe not the lacrosse team. They'll probably still have to log onto the UC website.
I'm pretty sure, and I actually think that the ESPN Plus deal actually, you know, even though it's produced by UC, I think they basically telecast that through ESPN Plus. Everything does. I think that's part of the deal.
Oh, the thing I read just said the major sports, like the.
Oh, maybe I don't know. Like, I'm not sure what they meant by major.
No, it was just like men's and women's basketball, like football. But who knows?
Yeah, who knows? Who knows? I thought I read somewhere where like.
Because we know like ESPN Plus shows all those things, so you got to think like there would be some connection there.
Right. Right. I mean, at least. Hell, I mean, maybe they can use like a recruiting tool, like UC used the Big 12 as a recruiting tool back in like 2015 or whenever that was. I don't know. It doesn't have to be true. The recruit just has to buy it, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's all you need is like the person to believe it. Like yeah, then once they seems good. Yeah, then once they sign that like binding deal, like they're stuck. They can't do anything.
That's right. Yeah. NCAA for the win. You have anything else on the AAC deal, or should we wrap things up?
Like picking through like an article, I think it's interesting. Like ESPN gets like all the Navy Notre Dame games that Navy hosts. Like Navy, like it seems like their CBS contract is like almost like terrible now.
Yeah, what is I remember reading that too. What is he even at?
I think the only games that like for them that stay on CBS are like the Army and Air Force games, because I think CBS has a deal with Army and Air Force. So yeah, it seems like Navy is like going to be on ESPN a lot more. Probably not their non-conference games, but like their conference games, of course.
Right. And that was kind of part of the deal, which also seemed kind of. I'd just be curious, but I don't really care because I don't root for those schools. But like, does Navy and Wichita State get a full $7 million share, or do they split it? Do they get less than a full share because, you know, Navy's football only, Wichita State's basketball only? Like, how does that work? But that was kind of an interesting thought I had. I'm glad you kind of mentioned that because I was thinking about that before we started recording. And yeah, definitely strange there.
Well, I don't know. That's an interesting. All it says, like in all the articles, is or all the teams get this much, but I don't know.
I really well, don't. Like if you do the math, it's like 1 billion divided by 12 divided by 12 comes to 7. You know, roughly 7 million. But there's technically 13 teams in this conference, if you count Navy and Wichita State as two separate teams. So I don't know.
Like what you have to, because like they only play half. I don't know. That's weird. Because you think just in terms of like name value, like Navy is so much more.
Right.
Like having Navy football has been such a huge boost for the league.
Yeah, definitely. Just in terms of like name recognition, you mentioned that. Like, I don't know. I'm not sure what they would do. I would, like, they probably weight it, right? They probably assume, like, they give it, like, shares. Like, Navy gets 4/7 of a share, and Wichita State gets 3/7 of a share or something like that. But, I don't know, that's for the lawyers to figure out. I'm no lawyer, that's for damn sure.
Yeah, like, I feel like that would be, like, almost impossible to actually find. Just like, I don't think anybody had, like, leaked that much. I did think that one of the most interesting parts is, like, speaking of the streaming, is, like, DAZN was, like, a really big, it was talking about pushing for the AAC.
And if, like, yeah, what is that?
It's like, the, it's like streaming. It's, like, the big boxing streaming thing. Like, then all your games would have been on streaming. Like, that would have been really crazy.
Yeah, no one wants that. We went through that with what? The Emerald Coast Classic?
Oh my god.
Terrible. Alright, you got anything else or should we get out of here?
No, that's about it. That's all I got. We're still in wait and see mode, so we'll publish this in Micron and we'll like make a decision. And everything we just talked about will be for a not.
Well, if we can do anything to help move things along, I'm all for it.
If so, and hopefully next time we talk, we'll have good news to talk about with Mick Cronin, or we'll be talking about something else completely. Well, thanks for joining us, and as always, go Bearcats!